Before my first day of pre-kindergarten, I knelt beside my bed and prayed, "Dear Lord Jesus, please let me learn how to read." Then I cried, filled with the desire to learn and terrified that I'd fail. It became one of my mom's favorite stories about me, how studious I was, how sincere. By the end of the week, I was tearing through books. All I wanted to do was study. I memorized Bible verses competitively and planned to attend the best college in the world, Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. With God's blessing, anything was possible. I could disprove evolution, become a medical missionary, find a cure for AIDS, and perform praise pop to sold-out stadiums. Meanwhile, my teachers called home about my uncombed hair, dirty socks, and shrunken shirts. Every few months, my dad's mother, Grandma Edna, visited and made me cry as she critiqued my grooming, dragging me to the beauty school to get an awful haircut. "Some of us have to work for a living," my mom huffed as soon as my grandmother left. My mom earned the money. She and I did all the housework. My father had briefly been a nurse, but stopped working before I was born. He believed it was the women's job to cook and clean, unless it was warm enough to grill bratwursts. My mom bemoaned what had become of her life. As a girl, she dreamed of attending Stanford. "I almost got in," she told everyone she could. "I think they only rejected me because I was 16. Remaining at home was not an option. Her parents starved their daughters, allowing each of them a single can of Metrical diet drink for breakfast and making them do calisthenics while chanting songs in unison. All four sisters would go on to struggle with their weight, chronic illnesses, and hoarding. Eager to escape, my mom fled to a rural campus of the University of Minnesota, where she studied art and education, and then got a job at the state crime lab. Apparently, everything would have been different if my mom had gone to Stanford. Especially when things were tense with my father, she rhapsodized about how she could have been living in California with palm trees and an ocean instead of scraping ice off her windshield 6 months out of the year. She would have married a medical student who made good money and helped out at home instead of marrying two deadbeats, one after the other. I doubted that things were so simple. An inevitable path from point A to point B. Like when my mom told the story of how she met my dad. She was 38, with a 10-year-old son from her first marriage, and longed for a blonde daughter to name Honey. My dad had a hazy backstory involving photography school, a botched surgery, a monastery, lots of LSD, hallucinations of headless chickens falling from trees, and a stint in solitary confinement after throwing baby bottles full of blood at the Pentagon. When my mom met him, he'd been bouncing around for 20 years. He had platinum hair and stonewashed blue eyes, but no stable address. 2 months later, she married him, even though the son from her first marriage begged her not to. 10-year-old Noah feared a stepfather and a baby would sabotage his future. My mom told this story with a laugh because Noah's premonition proved true. My father didn't want a stepson and banished Noah downstairs to raise himself. My dad didn't want kids, period. "But he was just too lazy to go buy condoms," my mom told me, chuckling. Just after she turned 40, she gave birth to me. Luckily, when my father held me, he fell in love. He nixed the honey idea and named me Margaret Frances. My father was home every day watching Jeopardy or building computers, our half-Maltese, half-cockapoo mutt Poochie sitting beside him. I didn't mind his strict rules. No nail polish, too sexy. No sports, filled with lesbians. No Girl Scouts, filled with lesbians and abortionists. Even when I wasn't allowed to see Noah, it made sense. He was my half-brother. Not my real brother, according to my father. Both my parents called me an only child.